It is wonderful to be here in South Africa. And if it wasn't for the African accent, I'd almost think I was back home. Over there at the wall of the fort, the praise of Yahweh, very beautiful music that's played there. And it really is my honor and my privilege to be here. And I'm just amazed at the zeal of the South African people in meeting so many people that I've never met in my life but seem to know me. So that is awesome. It's really, really a blessing. It's pretty interesting as I'm going to the different congregations, and I kind of had an outline of what I thought I was going to be preaching on, and each time I seem to be going somewhere as I'm praying in the morning, I'll be saying, no, preach on this. So I have a message today I feel inspired to give, because we're really in a new day in the congregation. You know, things are not different. If you're being led by the Spirit of Yahweh, you know that we're in a different time. To the world, it seems normal, right? To the world, they're moving ahead and everything seems normal and everything else. But to the people of Yahweh, we realize that we've entered a new time frame. And when you look at some of the things, like it talks about, as in the days of Noah will be the day of the Son of Man, and in the day of Sodom and Gomorrah, we can see it. We can see it's there. But the key to the believer is to look at that the world has always been defiled since the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve's decision to rebel against Yahweh. But there are certain points in mankind's history where the Father cannot let defilement go any longer. We see Genesis 6 as a perfect example of that. And we're living in one of those times. We're living in the time of artificial intelligence, where they're talking about now interconnecting human beings with artificial intelligence to make them some kind of cyborg being. And it's not sci-fi movies anymore, it's reality. You know, talking about taking brain tattoos and putting them on the brain of people to implant. So we're really at a new time. So the question comes, because a third of the Bible is prophecy, almost 90% of that is the time we're living in now. And the question comes up, what do we do? You know, what does it have to do with us? You know, do we prepare? And if we prepare, how do we prepare? So there's kind of two trains of thought, I guess, maybe even three trains of thought. One train of thought is, well, really, we don't do nothing. You know, that Yahweh is our protector, and we don't have to think about these things, and He's just going to protect us. So that's all we have to do. We just have to trust in Him. And of course, we always trust in Him, but we're going to see today, is that really scriptural? Is it scriptural that it's almost like the false grace? You know, Jesus did everything. I don't have to keep the Torah. There's nothing I have to do. So I don't think that's really the plan for the people of Yahweh. And then on the other side, there's people that, I guess they call them preppers and all this other stuff that they're preparing for, you know, wow, who knows what? Maybe a nuclear war, and, you know, if you wear these silver suits, and maybe the action comes on you. So I don't think we want to be in that camp, that we're solely just trying to save our life and try to prepare it. But I think we're more in the camp of putting the faith together with the action, like Scripture says. So the message is called preparation, faith, or lack of it. So what Yahweh tells us to do by preparing, is it faith or is it lack of it? Psalm 18, starting in verse 1, says, a psalm of David, the servant of Yahweh, who spoke the words of this song to Yahweh in the day that Yahweh delivered him from the hand of all his foes and from the hand of Saul. And he said, I love you, O Yahweh, my strength. Yahweh is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. He is my El, my rock. I seek refuge in Him. He is my shield in the horn of my salvation, my high tower. I will call on Yahweh, who is to be praised, and I shall be saved from my enemies. So, of course, no matter what plan you're on, no matter what we're living, no matter what happens, of course, trusting in Yahweh is always. That's what we do. That's what it's about. We're not here to extend our life in this world one more day, and we can't, then He wants us to. But at the same rate, is trusting in Him not preparing? Is it really trusting in Him? Is that really trusting him if he tells us certain things that are going to happen and we see them and we don't prepare? Psalm 91, a great psalm. Another psalm showing that without a shadow of a doubt, Yahweh is our rock and our fortress. So the same way by keeping the Torah, we're not trying to earn our salvation. And by preparing for the things that he shares with us to prepare for, by far we're not trying to save ourselves. It says, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide in the shade of the Almighty. I will say to Yahweh, my refuge and my fortress, my Elohim, I will trust in him. For he delivers you from the fowler's snare, from destruction's plague. With his feathers he will cover you, and under his wings you shall seek refuge. His truth is a shield and buckler. You shall not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, of the plague that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction laying waste at noon. 1,000 will fall by your right side, and 10,000 at your right hand. It shall not, and 10,000 at your right hand, it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes you will look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you, O Yahweh, are my refuge, you make the Most High your habitation. No evil shall happen to you, nor shall any plague come near your tent. For he shall give his cherubs charge over you and keep you in all your ways. They shall bear you up in their hands, that you not dash your foot on a stone. You shall tread on the lion and adder, the young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot. Because he has set his love on me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high because he has known my name. He shall call on me and I will answer him. And I will be with him in distress and I will rescue him and honor him. I will satisfy him with length of days and will make him see my Yeshua. So, great psalm. I've turned to the psalm many times in my life because we trust in Yahweh. We know that he will deliver us. But I think for people, maybe in Western society, that really have not seen persecution, you know, today more than 50% of the world is already part of the underground congregation. And I've mentioned this recently. We have now full congregations of people underground that are contacting and wanting to join our work. And they're not on the internet. They can't be. They're not openly. They're in areas that are communist and Islamic, in places where it is not legal to do what we're doing here right now. So it's something we should appreciate. But I think that actually, for Westerners to read this and think that by reading the scripture that nothing will ever happen to you is a fallacy. It's an absolute fallacy because starting with Yeshua, our Savior, we belong to a persecuted body. That's what we're joining. We're joining an outcast persecuted body that has been persecuted for 2,000 years. And I think people forget, even in our lifetime, just go back to World War II, not even a generation ago, that the Catholic Church, with the Pope at the top, was the one ordaining the killing of 6 million Jews, you know, during the Holocaust. They were allowing it, not that the Pope was doing it, but they were supporting that. They were allowing it. And during the times in the wilderness, again, the Catholic Church was killing our people in the millions because they would not baptize their children and they would not bow to the so-called authority of the Catholic Church. So this is the body we belong to. We belong to a persecuted body. And although we should believe this and bank on this, if you're just thinking that nothing will ever come to you, you're kidding yourself. Because that's not reality. All of us are going through the baptism of fire because that's the way Yahweh is going to purify us. And just to give one example, we can go to Acts, the 7th chapter, verse 51. And this is the story of Stephen, a man of faith, right? Acts 7 and verse 51. He says, O stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart, and this is where he's giving his sermon and he's telling the Jewish people about what they're doing when they're rejecting Yeshua. And he says, O stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and in ears, you always resist the Holy Spirit as your fathers did, you do also. Which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? And your forefathers have killed those who foretold about the coming of the righteous one, he whom you delivered up and whom you killed, who received the Torah by the command of cherubs and did not keep it. And when they heard these things, they were filled with anger within themselves, and they were gnashing their teeth against him. and being full of the Holy Spirit, looking intently into the heaven, he saw the glory of Elohim and Yeshua standing at the right of Elohim. Wow, there goes the oneness doctrine. You know, right now in heaven, there's the throne of the Father, and right next to him is Yeshua standing next to him. They're not the same being, right? And he said, "Behold, I see the heavens having been opened, and the Son of Man standing at the right of Elohim." And crying with a loud voice, they held their ears, and all of them rushed upon him. And they seized him and took him outside of the city. And they were stoning him, and those who testified against him laid their garments at the feet of a certain man who was called Shaul, the Apostle Paul. And they were stoning Stephen while he prayed. And he said, "Our Master Yeshua, receive my spirit." And after he knelt down, he cried with a loud voice and said, "Our Master, do not cause this sin to stand against them." And having said this, he fell asleep. So, did Stephen lack faith? No. No, he didn't. It's just we know we're living in the time that we're living in today. Revelation 6 and verse 9. Revelation 6 and verse 9. Excuse me. "And when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those having been slain for the word of Yahweh and for the witness which they had. And they cried with a great voice, saying, 'Until when, holy and true Master, do you not judge and take vengeance for our blood from those dwelling on the earth?' And there was given to each a white robe, and it was said to them that they should rest yet a little while until might be fulfilled under the number of their fellow servants and their brethren, those being about to be killed even as they were." So, no, Stephen did not lack faith. He was actually honored to be able to be martyred for the name of Yeshua. It's an honor that's given. We don't look for it, but if it's our honor, and we see in the end time, many people are going to be martyred. So, preparing for what's coming according to Scripture, it's not about trying to save ourselves. It's not about doing it out of fear, although that's why I said many people do it out of fear, because if you're doing it out of fear, you're missing the whole point of it. It's doing it out of faith. We're doing it because we believe what Yahweh says. We believe that the things he's saying that are coming, we see all the evidence of it, we know it's at the door, so we're following his word. And we're not doing it out of fear, we're doing it out of faith. "Many have been blessed to glorify Yahweh by giving their life for their believing in Yeshua. Does Yahweh expect his servants to prepare for the calamity that's coming from his word? Like I said, if not, then why would 1/3 of our Bible be prophecy and 90% be fraud time? Why would Yahweh tell us these things?" Of course he doesn't. Proverbs 22 and verse 3 says, "A prudent one sees the evil coming and hides himself, but the foolish go on and are punished." Proverbs 22 verse 3, "A prudent one sees the evil coming and hides himself, but the foolish go on and are punished." So it's the wise one. It's the man who's full of faith, who's preparing, not out of fear, but he's preparing out of faith because he believes what this word says. But it's the foolish one who just thinks, "Oh, this stuff will never happen." And he's going on, and he's not preparing. Hebrews 11 in verse 6. Hebrews 11 in verse 6. It says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please Yahweh. For it is right that the one drawing near to Yahweh should believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." Right? So, it's amazing for me to think, here it is, there's people in this world that question, does Elohim exist? Can you imagine, we're human beings. We're born, we die, you know, we come and go, maybe 60, 70 years, like it says in Scripture, 80 if you're blessed. But humans are questioning the one who has no beginning and no end, who's always been there. Right? Who's created everything. And that's why, though, it's impossible to please Yahweh if we don't even believe he's there. If we don't believe he exists. And if we believe he exists, the same Elohim who parted the Red Sea, and I've been there, is the same Elohim that's going to do the things he said today. And he made water come out of a rock, you know, at Horeb. And he made water come out of a rock already at Kehelat Selah. And if he needs water to come out of a rock again, he'll do it. You know, we don't have to worry about that or manna. It's the same person. It's the same, or being rather, not person. He's not a person, but he's a being. But the same being that did these miracles, the death of the firstborn, is the same one that's alive today. So we want to make sure that we understand that. And if we doubt in any way, then we're not having faith. And it's impossible to please Him without faith. Because we're living in a world of a facade. And that's the amazing part. You know, I tell people when they come to Israel, you know, we're trying to teach them the Israelite mindset. And it's like, this is the reality, even though it's a shadow. Israel isn't the reality either, but there's a shadow there. You can see the things that were done, and you see the runes, and you see the shadow. But in the rest of the world, everything is a facade. So you're living in a facade every day, and you have to believe in the reality of the Bible. It's like a contradiction. And unless you're focusing on that, you know, like I always say, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. You have to focus and be reading and studying and praying, or you know what? That facade out there is going to become your reality. And that's why people, when it comes, when push comes to shove, sometimes people's job will be more important than living near brethren. Or, you know, many people start coming to faith and they won't give up a job over the Sabbath. Because that paycheck and that money is real in front of them. And Yahweh just isn't real enough. But at the end of the day, every man will stand before the judgment seat of Messiah, believer or atheist, and we are going to have to give account for that. So we need to build this real faith. We need to understand it. You know, and sometimes it's self-righteousness, that people do things because of their own pride. That's not faith either. You know, faith is believing in Yahweh and just doing anything we have to do to be in His will. That's where true faith comes in. I'll continue here, verse 7 of Hebrews 11. He says, being divinely warned by Yahweh about the things not yet having been seen, moved with fear. So, right, fear is could be a good motivating factor, you know, as long as it's doing that. Being moved with fear, by faith, Noah prepared an ark for the salvation of his house, through which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness according to faith. So, you know, if you're looking and somebody's thinking, well, we don't have to prepare. You know, Yahweh will just protect us. Why did Yahweh have Noah build the ark? And the ark took 100 years. If you look when he begins, he's 500 years old. By the time they get into the ark, he's 600 years old. So think about it. In a time where there was never rain, there's only a mist that's watering, you know, the garden, he's telling him to build an ark. You know, can you imagine? It's never rained once. It's not like now you have droughts. And maybe if you're building an ark when there's a drought, people might think you're a little strange. But building an ark that is 450 feet long, four stories high, when it's never rained before and it's taking 100 years, think of the laughs and the jokes that people had about him, mocking him, until the day they got to the ark and the rain came, and then the fingers had a scratching on the doors of people wanting to come in later. And it's very interesting, too, because did Noah go into the ark right before the rain came? No, he went in 7 days before the rains, right? Everything runs in cycles of seven. So there's people out there, sometimes they even come to faith. And they come to faith because of fear instead of faith. And then maybe they're with you a year or two, and then something doesn't happen in the world the way they think it should happen, and then they leave. And then maybe they blame me. Well, you said this was going to happen, and you said, no, Yahweh does the times and seasons. I'm giving you definitely what's going to happen, but I'm not predicting when. My own personal belief, I really believe the Shemitah coming is major. That's just my personal belief. I'm not a prophet. I'm not saying Yahweh told me this Shemitah, this is going to happen, but I believe it in my spirit. I really believe the Shemitah is a turning point, and I'm preparing, and I say to our elders, you know what? If we do all this preparing, and it's not this Shemitah, then what's the worst that happened? We're going to have a really good year of food during that Shemitah. You know, we're just doing what we should be doing anyway. Because that's what Yahweh says in the sixth year, prepare for the sixth and the seventh and you'll have food in the eighth. But I'm going to give you a story here that tells us something else about a seven in the end time that's coming. So I'm doing it in faith because I believe in the word of Yahweh and I believe that His word is going to come about. And the Bible does say that to the world, it is going to come unaware, but to the people of Yahweh, it won't come unaware. Because we're preparing for it. So, this is where faith comes in. And like I said, Yahweh could have protected Noah without him building an ark for 100 years, but where would the faith be? Where would the faith be? And just like with us, it's a test for us. He's testing us to see if we really believe it. He was testing Noah, he tested Abraham, And it's the same book we're going to today. matter of fact, many stories in Scripture, Yahweh tests somebody to see what their attitude is. Matter of fact, I want to go to one story here in 2 Kings 5. Many stories Yahweh proves an action by somebody to prove the faith. Because it's not a game. And we have free will. And how does Yahweh know whether we're going to be obedient or not unless he tests us? It's that simple. And life itself is only a test. And that's why when you get to those big decisions of maybe losing a friend or even a family member over your belief, of losing a job over the Sabbath, always remember, life is a test. Some tests are bigger than others, but life is a test. And to us, that's all that matters, passing this test that we're calling life. 2 Kings 5 and verse 9. This is the story with Nahum, right? With Elisha. 2 Kings 5 and verse 9. And Nahum's coming, right? You know, the beginning of the story is actually a little bit comical because Nahum has this leprosy and he doesn't know what to do. And there's a girl there saying, well, we heard there's this prophet in Israel that could heal it. And then all of a sudden the king of Syria is writing to the king of Israel saying, you know, I have a commander, heal his leprosy. And what's the king? Who am I? Am I Elohim? I'm going to heal somebody. He doesn't have enough problems, right? There's war here, now somebody's saying heal leprosy to a king. So, but they know it's Elisha. Elisha's the prophet, not the king. And in verse 9 it says, and Nahum came with horses and with chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, go and you shall wash 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh shall return to you, and you shall be clean. Right? So, pretty simple, right? Go wash in the Jordan 7 times. But what's Nahum's response? Was he thinking, okay, let me go wash? No, he's angry. Why is he angry? Listen, Nahum was angry and went on and said, behold, I said he will certainly come out to me and stand and call on the name of Yahweh as Elohim and will wave his hand over the place and remove the leprosy. Right? So he's looking for signs and wonders the way people are today. They're all looking for these signs and wonders. But what does the man tell him? Which is good advice. Well, first he says, are not Abana and Pharpah and the rivers of Damascus better than the waters of Israel? Shall I not wash in them and be clean? And he turned on and went in fury. So he's literally angry. But his servants come near and spoke to him and said, my father, if the prophet had spoken a great thing to you, would you not do it? How much rather then when he says to you, wash and be clean, right? And this is what I have people tell me. They say, well, like some people in America, Babylon have said, if an angel came to me by night and told me, then I'd leave everything. And maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but my point is, do you really need a lying sign and wonder? Or even if it's a true sign and wonder, is that what you really need? Do we need an angel to tell us something to be obedient to the word of Yahweh? Does it have to come down to that? Or is it more simple than that? Is it simple that Yahweh laid out for us in the end time? He's told us everything that's going to happen, and here we are. And the fact is, it's the normalcy bias. Because we look out here and we think this is the way it's always been. When, like I said, whatever it is out there, you may call it a lot of things, it's not normal. It's not normal. And in 5,900 years, people rode horse and buggy, they planted in their backyard, you know, everything was a certain way. It's only in the last 50 to 100 years that we have what we call this chaos out there. And airplanes and cars and internet, it's not normal. You know, I always think about that when I'm riding on the road and I see like a deer or something that's hit by a car. And I'm thinking, boy, this poor animal's doing what he's been doing for 6,000 years. You know, he's instinctive, and he's going across, and here comes this 100-kilometer piece of metal that comes and whacks him. And then he's laying there dead. You know, it's like, wow, because it's not normal. It's not normal. So sometimes it's a lot more simple than we think. You know, yeah, the Elohim who created Adam and Eve, the Elohim who parted the Red Sea, the Elohim that did all the miracles that we see, he's the same one that's there today. And it's a very simple thing that he's telling us, as we're going to see here. It's actually pretty practical what he tells us. You know, he's telling us the preparation he's sharing with us is practical. But Nahum goes then, and he goes down and dips in the Jordan 7 times according to the word of the man of the Elohim. And his flesh returned like the flesh, like a little boy, and he was clean. Wow. So pretty simple. You know, we don't always have to be looking for the grandeur. Sometimes Yahweh's word and Yahweh's ways are much simpler than we could think. But if you look in the Bible, many, if not most times, Yahweh requires something to test our faith. It's not as simple as, like he said, he could do that. He could have just said, wave a wand and be clean, but he didn't. I'll give you another example here in John 9 with Yeshua. John 9 in verse 4. John 9 and verse 4. Yeshua says, it is necessary for me to work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night comes when no one is able to work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And he's talking to a man that comes to him for healing, right? He's looking to get his eyes healed. And does Yeshua have to do anything? You know, can't he just say, be healed, and he's healed? Of course he can, but look what he does. And when he said these things, he spit on the ground and mixed clay with his saliva, and he rubbed it into the eyes of the blind man. Wow, imagine somebody doing that to you. But why is he doing it? Because this is a parallel to Ezekiel 37. It's a parallel to the dry bones, right? And he's doing that. But he's taking his saliva as the living water and putting it on the man's eyes. And then what does he say to him? And he says, go purify yourself. And the baptismal of Siloam, which translated is sent, the pool of Siloam, then he went and washed and came seeing. Right? So he was testing him. There was something he had to do to prove his faith. And it was that simple. So it might seem a little odd, right? The same way to Nahum, it seemed odd to him. We got these great rivers in Damascus. You're going to tell me wash in the Jordan? But sometimes it's much more simpler than we think. Jacob 2 and verse 14. Jacob 2 and verse 14, because this is the premise of it. Yeah, Yahweh can do anything. He could just, you could pray and you could be healed. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes we do just pray and we're healed. But at the end of the day, when it comes to faith, your deed is the evidence of your faith. It's that simple. So when it comes to preparation, the reason why he isn't just going to protect everybody without preparation is because he wants to see if we really believe. And we're going to reap what we sow, like anything else. It's the same reason why if somebody goes out and violates the marriage covenant in Yahweh's Torah, and they wind up getting a disease like AIDS or something like that, they can repent and they're forgiven immediately. And the sin is gone from the east to the west. But it doesn't mean when they come and get baptized, the AIDS is going to go away. You know, I've dealt with it. You probably have here too. I've dealt with it a lot. I have seen people healed from it, and I've seen other people that weren't. So we reap what we sow, and sometimes Yahweh will leave those things there because it's not about this body. It's not about this world. It's not about this life. This is just a test. And if that test is, like Stephen, you're going to live 30 years, and you're going to have that test. Or if you're going to be Abraham, and you're going to live 175 years. It doesn't make a difference. The length doesn't. It's the little bit of time you have now. Are you proving to him that you'll be faithful, that you believe him? Because it's impossible to please him without faith. So Jacob, second chapter, in verse 14. He says, my brothers, what is the gain if anyone says he has faith but does not have deeds? Is the faith able to restore him to life? But if a brother or sister is naked and may be lacking in daily food, and any one of you say to him, go in peace, be warmed and filled, but does not give them the things the body needs, what gain is it, right? So a brother or sister comes into the congregation and telling you they have a problem. You know, they can't pay their rent. They lost their job and they can't pay their rent. Of course we all pray. You know, we pray. But you don't say, okay, we'll pray for you and send them out. He also needs money. He needs money to pay their rent. And that's where the rubber hits the road. Are we willing to take from what we don't really have and share with somebody else? It's easy to say, I'll pray for you. That's the easiest thing to do. And we do pray. And it is important. But then where's the deed? We have to also stand up to show if we really have the faith. And if any one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, but does not give them the things the body needs, what gain is it? So also, If faith does not have deeds, is dead, being by itself. But someone will say, you have faith and I have deeds. Show me your faith apart from your deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that Elohim is one, Echad. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. But are you willing to know, O vain man, that faith apart from deeds is dead? Was not our father Abraham justified by his deeds, offering up his son Isaac on the altar? You see how faith helped with his deeds, and how by his deeds the faith was made perfect. And that word literally is completed, matured. And the scripture was fulfilled, saying, and Abraham believed Yahweh, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And he was called friend of Elohim. You see then how a man by his deeds becomes righteous, and not by faith only. But in the same way, Rahab the innkeeper was also justified by her deeds, having received the messengers and sending them out by another way. For as the body is dead apart from the spirit, so also faith without deeds is dead. So it really is, you know, like they say, put your money where your mouth is. It's easy to just say words. But in the world of words, we want our actions to back it up. That's what Yahweh is looking for, and that's why he tests us. The deed is the evidence of our faith. It is easy for a faithless person to do nothing and not act on the word of Yahweh, hoping that nothing will happen to them. This is not faith, but it's self-righteous fear. And unfortunately, a lot of people do that. They're so fearful of it that they don't want to do anything because they just want to make believe it's going to go away. You know, that it's nothing will ever happen to them. So now let's go to the times we're living in here. And let's take a look. Matthew 24. Because faith is evidence, right? Is there evidence that these times that we're living in today, that this is it? This is the time. Matthew 24 and verse 3. And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when will these things be? And what is the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So although, if you look at the Olivet prophecy, you do have it in Matthew 24, you have it in Luke 21, and you have it in Mark 13, you know, the synoptic good news messages. And many of these things did happen in the first century. Primarily, this prophecy is for the end time. Because this is what he's saying. You know, it's very clear. They're sitting there saying, when will these things be, and what is the sign of your coming at the end of the age? There's not too many ways you can misinterpret that. So what he's going to tell us is, these are the signs that we have to look for. If we drop down to verse 4 through 8, and answering Yeshua said to them, see that no man deceive you. So deception is the very first thing. And here we are. I mean, wow. I say, pre-internet age, you know, 20 years ago, if I came up to you and I told you, in the next few years, you're developing something they're going to call the internet. Ooh, what's that? Well, it's going to be this thing where, you know, you're going to have this little box and it's like computerized. And anything that's said, like as I'm speaking, you can immediately check if what I'm saying is true. It's like, wow, really? Yeah. Would you think that's going to make the congregation stronger or weaker? Stronger, right? We can't be deceived because all we have to do is check on it. Now, go 20 years down the future, here we are. Has the internet made us, even as human beings, weaker or stronger? And I say, Donald Trump did not create fake news. You know, he may have coined it in the political realm in the last couple of years, but Satan is the Elohim of fake news. You know, there's been fake news since the beginning of time. And we've been preaching about fake news. I've been preaching it for 35 years. Sunday is fake news. Christmas is fake news. But today, you have all kinds of fake news. You have things that people are believing in. The rotating Sabbath. You know, the Sabbath rotates by the new moon. And you really got to watch this stuff on the internet. You've got to be careful. You know, the flat earth. You know, there's... nobody just thought of that. They weren't praying. No, you got that on the internet. And it's not true. Scientifically, it's not true. It's not true that if you go far enough on the earth, you're going to fall off to the bottom. It's not true that there's a 100-mile ice wall. It's just not true. You know, do you want to believe the truth or do you want to believe a lie? And you have to decide this. And you're getting it from the internet, which is Satan is the prince of the power of the airwaves. He's bringing that. And that's why I say, just ask yourself one simple question. Who created the internet? Yahweh or Satan? And I can tell you it's not Yahweh. The internet is filled with gossip, maligning, lies, fake news, day in and day out. You know? So here we are. Deception. But you don't have to be deceived. Yeshua says it. We don't have to be deceived. Because you know what? Whether men went to the moon, or whether the earth is flat or round, that has nothing to do with my salvation. I want to focus on the book. I want to focus on the plan of salvation. I want to focus on these things. And if you allow yourself to get off on these tangents, you will be deceived. You will be deceived. I know Sabbath keepers from Church of God from 30 years ago, and they're believing in the rotating Sabbath. They're believing now the Sabbath. This month is on Tuesday, next month is on Thursday. And this is why we have to be careful. This is the first thing we're warned about. See that no man deceives you. See that no man deceives you. The next says, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Messiah. And they will cause many to be deceived. Right? Some of these people are Sabbath keepers. Some of them are sacred name people. Satan will use anything he can get, but they're not under judicial order. You know? They're certainly not under judicial order with these things. And that's what I say. I've talked with people that fell for the lunar Sabbath. And I say, read my book, The Gates of Hell Will Not Prevail Against You. In 2,000 years, no leader, messenger, you know, pastor of Yahweh has ever taught that the Sabbath rotates. As a matter of fact, more than any other sign, for the last 2,000 years of our congregation, starting with the apostles today, is the Sabbath. More than anything that they write about is the seventh-day Sabbath on Saturday. And people that believed that for 25 years gave it up for nothing. And I would say, where did you get this from? The internet. Who wrote the article? I don't know. You don't know. You gave up the sign, the family sign that you're a child of Yahweh. Exodus 31. For what? You don't even know who did it. You know, we got to guard ourselves against this. For many will come and say, I am the Messiah, and they will cause many to be deceived. And now what else happens? For you are bound to hear of revolutions and rumors of war. Right? We've had the major wars, World War I, World War II. Now revolutions going on all over the earth. Pretty interesting. Not just wars, but revolutions. What do you see going out there all over the place now? In all of these different countries, even Western society now, even America, you have these revolutions going on in the streets. In France, you have the Yellow Jackets. Even in Israel, they started with that. Because people in the Laodicean era, they want to fight against the government. They want to fight for their rights. Exactly what it says. Wars and revolution. Rumors of wars and revolution. Watch out and do not be disturbed, right? So don't get too upset about that. For it is necessary that all these things happen, but the end is not yet. So we've been seeing these things go on, he tells us. He's telling us exactly it's not yet. He also told us, as we'll see in a bit here, that it will all happen in one generation too. That it's not going to be over hundreds of years like Daniel 9. For you are bound to hear of revolutions and rumors of wars. Watch out that you do not be disturbed, for it is necessary that all these things happen, but the end is not yet. It's not yet, and we've been living in this. And that's why some people who saw some of these things in the last 10, 20 years, but the end didn't come, they got discouraged and they quit. But he says right here, that's only the beginning of sorrows. That is not the last thing that we're going to see. Verse 8, but these are the beginning of sorrows. So verse 7, for nation will be raised against nation and kingdom against kingdom. We have world war coming, another big sign. And there will be famines and plagues and earthquakes against many places. Wow. Just last week, I think there were 3 major earthquakes in Europe. You know, and normally, if you go back 100 years ago, 200 years ago, you only had every decade maybe 1 or 2 major earthquakes. Now we have thousands of them. You know, thousands of them that come up. So all these things that Yeshua prophesied are all here. So it's not one rogue sign, you know, it's many. Daniel 12:4, you know, knowledge of people will be running to and fro, knowledge will be increased. Anywhere I travel in the world, every airplane is filled with everybody. It doesn't matter if you can go to the poorest place or the richest place. Everyone is traveling, running to and fro. And it's amazing to think millions of people a day 1 hour they're in China, 1 hour they're in the U.S., 1 hour they're over here in France, 1 hour they're in Russia. People, it's unbelievable. And that's the time we live in. It's prophesied. People will run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. Knowledge used to, around 1900, knowledge would increase. I think they said, every 100 years or something like that, 150 years. And now they're saying knowledge is increasing. Every couple of months, it's doubling, the amount that it's doubling. It's just amazing how fast things are moving. And we've never seen anything like this. To think that just a couple hundred years ago, in the United States, as they're going west, they don't even know what's going to happen. They've never gotten to California. It's just there today. You can go to the ends of the earth, through Google Maps. We know every last part of the earth. There's no part we don't know, because knowledge is being increased in ways that we can't even imagine. But all of it is part of prophecy. It's all part of prophecy in verse 32. As they're asking him about this now, what's the main sign? Learn the parable of the fig tree. When its branch becomes tender and it puts out leaves, you know that summer is near. So also when you see all these things, know it is near at the door. Truly I tell you, in no way will this generation pass until all these things have occurred. So it's all going to happen in one generation, and here we are. 70 is the number of endpoint. In Israel, we just passed this year our 70th Passover there since being a nation. Also, 70 years are given to Babylon to rule the nations. Here we are, 70. It's even China's 70th year. This is their 70th anniversary of the Republic of China. But we see so many things, so many signs that Yahweh gives us. How can we deny them? How can we deny that not only is this the last generation, because things are happening now that have never, ever happened before, but we are at the end of the last generation. It's not the beginning of that 70 years. It's very much toward the end of that 70 years. Psalm 102 in verse 13. If you look at Psalm 102, it talks about the Holocaust in the beginning. The skin cleaving to the bones, the way it was during the Holocaust times. The people were starved to death. We see about the bodies being burned, in the crematorium. So all these things, and then they're crying out to Yahweh in verse 13. He says, "You shall have mercy on Mount Zion, for the time to pity her, yea, the appointed time has come." So the appointed time is coming, the time that Yahweh will be redeeming it. And now, for the last 20 years, it's the first time since Bible times that Mount Zion is rebuilt. Look at verse 17. Verse 16, rather. When Yahweh will build up Mount Zion, he will appear in his glory. Mount Zion has been sitting there now for 2,000 years, and just in the last 20 years, it is restored. It is rebuilt. The tabernacle of David, they weren't looking for it, but they found it. Why? Because Yahweh says, "I will rebuild the tabernacle of David before he comes." And there it is. I've seen it with my eyes. So we're living in these times of restoration. And Yahweh is restoring the land of Israel, the people of Israel, and the Torah of Israel. We're seeing with our eyes. We're seeing things that people would have been amazed to see. Like it says, kings and prophets would love to see what you're seeing, but they didn't. Verse 18, who is it written for? This shall be written for the last generation, and people to be created shall praise Yahweh. So while we see the people that went through the Holocaust are the same people that will come in the kingdom. That's what Yeshua said. This generation will not pass. It'll all happen in one generation. And we saw the Holocaust. And we saw Yahweh have pity on Zion because it was her appointed time. And we see Isaiah 66. Can a nation be born in one day? Yes, May 14, 1948. A nation is born in one day. And that starts the time frame of the end time of modern Israel. And here we are. 70 years later, at the end of the end. So, as we see these things, as we know World War is coming, as we know that all these things are coming, as we know the Beast Tower that I'm going to read here in a minute is coming on the earth, where no man will be able to buy and sell, should we be preparing? Well, put it this way. If you're not, then you don't believe Yahweh. It's that simple. We have so much evidence, and if the deed is the evidence of your faith, then that means if you're doing nothing and just sitting back, and going to your job and your family and your life is normal, then you can't believe. There's no way you can believe. And I say it. If all of a sudden you saw flames coming up in the corner here and smoke coming, there's nobody on this earth that would say, don't worry about it. Yahweh will take care of it. You know, it doesn't work that way in life, right? When you see fire, you run. You see smoke, you run. Because you know it's going to burn you to death. You don't sit there and say, no, Yahweh will put it out. It doesn't work that way. That's not how life works. The way life works is maybe Yahweh will wake you up in the middle of the night and have you smell it so that you can put it out or you can run for safety. But it's not the false grace. It's not sit there and do nothing and Yahweh will take care of everything. He'll take care of everything, but he's going to test us in the meantime. He's got to test us to see if we believe or not. Matthew 24, continuing there, verse 37. Matthew 24 and verse 37. But as the days of Noah, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as they were in the days before the flood, eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah went into the ark. Right? And they did not know until the flood came and took all away. So also will be the coming of the Son of Man. And like I said, Noah went into that ark 7 days in advance. One whole seven he went in the ark. Why? Number one, because he had to be sanctified. Yahweh had to sanctify him before the flood came. It wasn't running at the last minute. Number two, he probably had a lot of stuff to prepare. You know? It wasn't just a matter of getting in there. You're talking about all the animals. You're talking about how big that ark was. There was probably a lot of work inside of there to do. And like I said, for 7 days, he was inside that ark. So it's the same with us, because when Yeshua returns, you got to go to work on day one. You're going to work on day one. He's coming back and his reward is with him, right? So now when he hands you that paper and he says, here, brother so-and-so, you open it up because we're going to be kings and priests. And he says, your first assignment is going to China. There's about 4 million people still alive there. They have no idea what happened. They're atheists. You know, they survived this. You have to go there. Are you ready for it? Are you ready? Or are you still fearing what happened in your life? Are you still fighting with your wife or your husband? Are you still lying at work and doing this? Because if you're not ready, you're not going. People think that they can continue in sin, and then when Yahweh returns, somehow it'll just change us. Well, if that's the case, why would we have 6,000 years of what we went through? If it's that simple, that we don't have to grow in character, and Yahweh will just come and change all of us, then why would he have 6,000 years of this hellhole that we're doing here on earth, going through all this horror, people suffering? No, he's allowing this because the only way you can grow is by going through this struggle and these trials. But you have to grow, you have to change. And you can't do it out there in this world today. You cannot do it in Satan's society. It's impossible. And that's the reason why Yahweh started to bring his people to the wilderness. And I look and I say, if the Waldenses, right, 1,500 years ago, if they felt then, in the year 1000, when the world was a million times different than this, that they felt we need to be out of society because we have the Spirit of Yahweh in us, and we want to be sanctified, then how on earth would we feel today that we could live in the world, work in the world, have friends in the world, and it's not going to affect us? Believe me, it's affecting you. It's affecting me. It's affecting all of us. You know, it's the normalcy bias. And there's a point in time where Yahweh has to take his people to the wilderness. And I'm not saying pack up tomorrow and run up to the top of the mountain. What I'm saying is you've got to get that mentality. You've got to get the mentality, and you have to start in little ways. You know, start in little ways. You know, I still find brethren still on Facebook. What for? What is social media? What's the point of it? You know, that's a little thing, but it's a start. Get rid of it. You know, brethren that aren't praying and studying every day. You know, well, I have to work, I have to do this. Start 10 minutes a day if you're not doing anything. You've got to get started on this, because this is serious. This is life and death. And if we have the same mindset as the world, there's a problem here. There's a problem. Because we're called to come out of the world. We're called to be different. And that's the reason why Yahweh takes his people to the wilderness. Because like I said, there's things that you may not be able to do on your own. I've had people admit to me, maybe they're smoking cigarettes. And they say, I hate it. I hate myself. I'm repenting. But they're addicted. They can't do it. Come to the wilderness. There's not a cigarette in the wilderness. You're not going to smoke sand. You know? The wilderness is a blessing because there's things that you'll overcome there because you don't have a choice that you can't overcome in sane society. And when you live in community, you can't fake it. You know, as we come together on the Sabbath, we can fake it. Nobody knows what you're doing the other 6 days. You know? But when you live in community, you're forced to grow. Because you're living together every day. You're helping each other. You're working with each other. And Yahweh, it's a blessing. It's not a curse. It's a way to help us to overcome. Because every last thing that He's prophesied is here. And why would He tell us all these things except if it's to warn us what's happening? So the same way, continue in verse 39. And they did not know until the flood came and took all away. So also will be the day of the coming of the Son of Man. At that time, two will be in the field. One is taken and one is left. Two grinding at the mill. One is taken and one is left. Be alert then, for you do not know in what hour your master comes. Right? We don't know. At the end of the day, we have no idea. It says the Son of Man comes at a time when you least expect him. And I say, wow, that's hard. I'm always expecting him. But again, you know, it's deception. Satan's deception. So he's coming at a time we least expect him. That means it could be any time. Maybe we missed something with prophecy, right? Maybe he's coming sooner than we think. It doesn't say he's coming later than we think. It says he's coming sooner than we think. So that's why we got to get ready. This is the time we have to start overcoming and we have to prepare. Noah prepared for the flood that's coming. And like it says here, one's preparing and one doesn't. It's that simple. One is preparing and believing. One is just going off to the world and is not. Revelation 13. Because there's something else that's coming that if you don't prepare, you're going to have a big problem coming very, very soon. And this is the main reason why Yahweh is telling us to prepare. Because of this. Revelation 13 and verse 3. And I saw one of the heads having been slain to death, and its deadly wound was healed. And all the earth wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with it? So we know there's this global government coming, this one world government, right? And we're not for it. We see it as something bad. But to the world, they're going to worship it. They're going to want it. They're happy for this. So they don't have to prepare because they're going along with it. But we need to realize this stuff is coming. And a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies was given to it. And authority was given to it to act for 42 months. So praise Yahweh that we know when this time comes, it's 42 months. We don't have to worry that it could be 20 years or 30 years. You know exactly what it is. So when this world government is set, when the mark of the beast comes, we know exactly the time frame that we have to endure. And it opens its mouth in blasphemy toward Yahweh to blaspheme his name and his dwelling place and those dwelling in heaven. And today we see many people doing that, blaspheming the name of Yahweh. And it was given to make war with the saints and overcome them. So does it mean no, nothing's going to happen to us? No, there's a great martyrism that's coming. So many will be martyred and be blessed as an honor to give their life, but not everybody's going to be martyred. You know, so the ones that do not have, that's not their fate, then we have to prepare for it. And authority was given to it over every tribe and kindred and tongue and nation. Definitely a world government. And those dwelling on the earth will worship him, the beast. Those of whom the names have not been written in the book of life, having been slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Do you have ears to hear? You know, because like I said, it really is not that difficult. It's so plain, the prophecies. It's not kind of like, Daniel with the handwriting on the wall. You know, there's some kind of foreign handwriting that we got to figure out the code. This is pretty simple because we're living in those times. And then in verse 16, and the small and the great and the rich and the poor and the freemen and the slaves, it causes that they give them all a mark on their right hand or in their foreheads. Even not that any could buy or sell unless the one having the mark or the name of the beast or the number of the name. So again, the mind is how you think. The hand is what you do. And this is why the beast is putting this mark. It's very interesting when they talk about this chip, that they say the chip has to go in your hand or in your forehead, because it's the only part of your body that the temperature will not corrupt the chip. And they're already doing it. It's not a theory. They're already chipping people. People are already being chipped. The cashless society, you look at China, you look at India, you look at Australia, some of the biggest economies in the world who are already about 95% toward a cashless society, you know, or close to that, where everything is like that. So this isn't some kind of theory or fear-mongering. This is something that's happening as we speak. And then he says, here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding compute the number of the beast. Compute. Computer, compute. Let him who understands compute the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and its number is what? 666. But we know, in Hebrew and Aramaic, there are no numbers. It's a letter system. There's only letters. So the Aleph is 1, the Bet is 2, the Gimel is 3. So what is the 6th letter of the Hebrew alphabet? The Waf. So it's WWW666. So it's very clear that this marking is dealing with something with computers. And we already know it. They have them. It's a size of grain. They implant them in your hand. And like I said, only Yahweh knows whether this will be worldwide tomorrow or 10 years from now, whatever. But certainly it's not that far down the line. If you look at the banking system, they said already 92% is already cashless worldwide. Of money that is transferred, 92% is already cashless. So it doesn't take that much to get that last 8%. And that's why if you notice recently, I've noticed it because I travel a lot, most countries keep changing their money now every 2 years. You know, in Israel, they just did. They didn't change their money in like 30 years. Now all of a sudden, they're changing the money again because they don't want people having cash. And people that know that this is happening and maybe trying to store cash, you can't do it because now we changed the money again and that cash is worthless. And they want to know. So here we are. We're really at the cusp of all this. So do you have ears to hear? Yahweh gave us these scriptures so we can prepare in faith for what's coming because we believe His word. We're not doing it to save our skin. Like I said, if you prepare in a community, say like the community they're building here, you know, in South Africa, they might be preparing for somebody else. Because you could prepare, and maybe you'll die. Maybe you're martyred, or maybe Yahweh brings you over to the Middle East, to a place that He has prepared. But you know what? Then that means somebody else who was Laodicean and didn't prepare, Yahweh also has that backed up too. I don't want to bank on that. I tell the brethren in the U.S., there's basically three plans for leaving Babylon. You know, the Bible says you have to flee Babylon, which is physically the land of America, but in the end time, the system has come worldwide. So all of us are living in Babylon, as far as the system goes. And that's the reason why we got to go to these refuges, these cities of refuge, because it's everywhere now. Everywhere. I say as I travel here, it amazes me. This is the 16th time I've been to Africa. First time South Africa, praise Yahweh. But I feel like I'm an American in a lot of ways. I see the same. I even see Kentucky Fried Chicken, McDonald's, you know, the Golden Arches. And it's very similar. And I didn't see that in other parts of Africa. Although in certain places, like Kenya and whatnot, they're building like that. But you're seeing Babylon is gone everywhere. But I tell the brethren there that do live in the U.S., because that is the land will be completely destroyed. I say you basically got three plans. You know, it's like going to an insurance agent, right? You got to buy what you can afford. And we have the comprehensive plan where you get everything, but it's a little more expensive. And then you have the cheap plan for emergencies. But the first plan is the Abraham plan. That's the best plan we got. Abraham get up and leave. Abraham gets up and goes. He gets to bring all slaves, his servants, his money, everything. It's a great plan because he's showing faith and everything is there. Then we have the Israelite plan. Not as expensive as the Abraham plan, but it's also not as good, right? Because they got to pilfer the Egyptians and take things with them, but they were fleeing too. So it's a little bit rough. And then for those who really, you know, don't have a lot of assets, we have the Lot plan. I don't even want to really tell you about that one, because that's not really a good plan. It's like, leave now or die, you know? So you have those three plans of fleeing there. And if you go in the Abraham plan, Yahweh says you will not go by flight. You're not going to go by haste. But He is going to go before you, and He's going to be your rear guard. So this is the point now. We're not preparing like some kind of crazy preppers. You know, we're not trying to store 30 years of food, you know, and have all these crazy aluminum suits in case there's a nuclear war. No, what we're doing is we're looking at what Yahweh says, we're believing His word, we're seeing the signs, and we're doing it for love for our brethren. Because like I said, it might not even be for you. You know, you could prepare, and then it's going to be for somebody else. But we're proving to Yahweh that we're putting our money where our mouth is. I'm not going to put my money into new golf clubs, you know, because I like golfing. No, golfing. Who wants to golf? It's not the time for golfing, right? It's the time for preparing. So I'm going to put that money into preparation because I believe Yahweh. That's it. And then the rest is up to Him. Then we go to Psalm 91. Because whether I live or I die, whatever happens, that'll be up to Him. But I did my part. Faith without deeds is dead. We have to do our part, and Yahweh will do His part. Song of Solomon 2 in verse 13. Song of Solomon 2 in verse 13. It says, and I'm sure most people here have heard the Bible study on the Song of Solomon. It's an awesome Bible study. I just love that Bible study because it taught me something of the love of Yeshua for me in a way that no other book in the Bible does. You know, I mean, how He looks at His bride and loves His bride and just can't wait for His bride, and that's what we are. You know, if you're a first fruit believer, to one extent or another, you're part of the bride of Messiah. So you see that in here. And then chapter 2 of Song of Solomon, verse 13 says, "The fig tree spices her unripe figs, and the vines give a fragrance by the blossom. Arise, my love, come, my beautiful one, and come yourself." Right? Come yourself. So there is one specific place. I went over this in the sermon a couple weeks ago, the place of Selah, you know, in Jordan, that Yahweh has set apart for part of the bride in the end time. And He says, you know, come yourself because you're ready. You've done it. You know, it's not a thing where you can take somebody. You can't earn somebody else's salvation, right? If Noah, Job, and Daniel stood before me, they would only save their own life. You can't save somebody else's life, but you can save your own. So He says, "Come, my beautiful one. Come, my love, but come yourself. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock," right? In the secret place of Selah. In the secret place of Selah. In the secrecy of the steep place. And it is very steep. There's 1,000 steps going to the top. "Let me see your form. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your form is beautiful." And to me, the fact that right now Yahweh is opening up these doors in Selah, which I never thought of in my life. I didn't even know about it until a couple of years ago. Had no idea. But that Yahweh now is opening doors for His people there is just another sign to me of absolutely amazing to be in the wilderness. We have possibly the opportunity, I haven't said it publicly yet, but I share with some people, we possibly have the opportunity, this Sukkot, of going to Mount Sinai. It's been a dream of mine since I've been a believer, and it's impossible because you can't get into Saudi Arabia. And now Yahweh has opened up a door, and there's a very good chance that we're going to actually go to Mount Sinai, see the Rock of Horeb, see where Yahweh spoke with Moses. Why now? Why now? Why is He opening these doors to the real wilderness that He says He'll bring His people to? And Selah and Mount Sinai? Because it's the time. It's the time of reformation of all things. And Yahweh is doing it. And I'm excited. I'm coming out of my shoes because I'm just so excited to see Yahweh's word coming off those pages. But it's for every believer everywhere in the world. Each of us simply has to surrender our will to His will, right? And we still are in this world. We still have to work. We still have to care for our families. We still have to pay rent. But seek ye first the kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given. Seek ye first the kingdom. That's faith. That's faith, right? Yahweh comes first. His righteousness comes first. His word comes first. And the rest will take care of itself. And I can tell you that they used to call us when we first left Babylon and we were living in the old city, you know, and $7 a night in an old rundown hostel, the homeless missionaries. We had no money, you know, for years. We really had nothing. How did we survive? Because Yahweh used to have money in the street that we would find every day. pennies, nickels, dimes in the local currency, of course, and then it started to be bills. But every month we'd find just enough to pay our rent. And most people can't believe that, but it's true. You know, we had no source of income at that time. You know, we were just following Yahweh. And we followed Him and just believed in faith. And I'm not going to stop now. I'm walking on this walk 35 years, and I see the end. I'm on the top of Mount Zion. I see the promised land. And it's not that far away. It's not that far away. And that's why now, this home stretch, wow. If our brothers and sisters lived with this seal 1,000 years ago for that kingdom, how much more for us that we're right there at the cusp? You know, it's going to be a hard time we've got to get through now. And like I said, I don't know how long it's going to be. Another 7, 10 years, 20 years, maybe 5 years. I don't know, but it's short. It's not that long. Because I know 35 years as a believer has gone really, really fast. As you get older, the time kind of goes faster. You know, 1,000 years to Yahweh is a day is 1,000 years. Because it's all in perspective, right? When you're a 10-year-old boy, one summer is 1/10 of your life, 10%. But when you're 55, one summer is 1/55th of your life. So the time seems to go faster when you get older because the perspective of time is different. So this is the reason why we should be so excited, even though we have a rough time. But praise Yahweh for that. Because we all need this baptism of fire. You know, there's some struggles I went through this year in my life that I'm so much thanking Yahweh for. Because I see His mercy and His love in a way I haven't seen since being a believer. And now I see it more clearly. And I say, thank you, Yahweh. Thank you, Yahweh. I love meeting Wilma's father. Everything was, thank you, Yahweh. And I'm like, wow, that's what I do. I get up and it's like, am I alive? Let me pinch myself. Thank you, Yahweh. Then put a foot down. Thank you, Yahweh. Put the other foot down. Thank you, Yahweh. You know, somebody's not in the bathroom. Good. Thank you, Yahweh. Everything is thank you, Yahweh. The glass of water. Because Yahweh is so good to us. And here we are to take us out of that world. You're one in a million. You could be the person out there, right? Working today, doing whatever today, struggling today, and yet you're in this room as a called out child of Yahweh. And not because we're any better, because the opposite. He calls the weak of the world to confound the mighty. And thank you, Yahweh. Thank you that I am weak enough that I can be here. Because if I wasn't, I'd be one of those guys out there thinking I'm this or that. So thank you that I'm weak enough that I can be sitting in this room. That He gets the glory for everything. But this is where we are. Let's go to Genesis 41 now. Be ending here in a little bit, maybe about 10 minutes. Because I really want to, I mentioned this in a few sermons, but I didn't go over and read it. But I want to read it now because I think Genesis 41, when we're looking at preparation, the end time, is extremely important. Because in Scripture, there's things that we see where Yahweh says something double, which are dual prophecies. And this one, I think, is an important one when we're looking at cycles of 7 and the end time. Genesis 41, starting in verse 15. And this is Pharaoh's dream, right? And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is no one to interpret it. I have heard about you, saying you hear a dream to interpret it. And Joseph replied to Pharaoh, saying, not I. Elohim will answer the peace of Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, in my dream, lo, I was standing on the lip of the river. And behold, 7 cows were going up from the river, fat of flesh, beautiful form, and were feeding in the reeds. And behold, 7 other cows were going up after them, poor and very evil form and lean of flesh. I have not seen any like them in all the land of Egypt for badness. And the cows, the lean and the evil, ate the first 7 fat cows. And they went into their stomachs, and it could be seen that they had gone into their stomachs. And their appearance was as evil as at the beginning, and I awakened. And I looked in my dream, and behold, 7 ears of grain were coming up on one stalk full of good. And behold, 7 ears, withered, lean, blasted by the east wind, sprouting forth after them. And the lean ears were swallowing the good ears. And I spoke to the magicians, but not one is making known the meaning to me. And Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. Elohim has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows, they are 7 years. And the seven good ears, they are 7 years. The dream is one ikad. Like I said, twice speak, saying a double, showing dual prophecy. And the seven thin and evil appearing cows going up after them, they are 7 years. And the seven empty ears blasted by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. This is the word that I spoke with Pharaoh, what Elohim is about to do. He has made Pharaoh see. Behold, 7 years of great plenty are coming in all the land of Egypt. And 7 years of famine will arise after them. And all the plenty of the land of Egypt will be forgotten, and the famine will consume the land. And the plenty in the land will not be remembered because of the famine afterwards. It will be very severe. And as the dream being repeated to Pharaoh twice, the thing is settled because it is from Elohim, and Elohim is hastening to do it. And now let Pharaoh look for a wise man who is intelligent and wise and send him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh act and let him appoint rulers over the land and take a fifth of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of plenty. And let them gather all the food of these coming good years. And let them heap up grain under Pharaoh's hand as food in the cities, and let them keep it. And let the food be for a store for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will be in the land of Egypt. And let not the land be cut off by famine. And the word was good in Pharaoh's eyes and in the eyes of all his servants. So it's pretty simple, right? You're going to have seven really good years where it's going to prosper. And then you can save and store things for the seven bad years. And it's not that difficult to understand it. And when we're looking in the sense of end time, right, we see, and I gave a message on this not too long ago on the cycles of seven in the millennium. You could see in the last 100 years, almost every single important point that has happened in history has happened on the Shemitah year. I mean, it's amazing to see how much has happened there. And financially, the financial ups, the financial downs have all happened in the Shemitah year. And when you look at the pattern that was happening, it really looked like that last Shemitah, 2015-16, was really going to be the beginning of some bad stuff. And what happens instead? You have President Trump come into office, and the economy changes almost immediately. It goes from on the brink of dissolving to becoming the best economy that's ever been in the country of Babylon. The unemployment is the lowest, the money, all the things that are there. Because Yahweh has this insertion for his people. Because where would we be now if we were in that seven? Right? We would be now starting the fourth year if this was the bad time. None of us prepared. We didn't even prepare for the Shemitah because we didn't know it. Never mind preparing for the 7 years. We'd be in trouble if we didn't prepare. Now again, Yahweh can do anything. He could have manna come in the wilderness. But he's teaching us something because he doesn't want to do it just for us. He wants us to show in faith that we believe it. So he gives us this seven now. And here we are, we're in the fourth year already. We're in the fourth year already. You know, we're winding down. That Shemitah's coming, not that long. And have we prepared? We really have to start if we believe it, or we have no one to blame but ourselves. You know, and if you look at recent history, I mean, we've had the big downturn in 2001, 2008, and some of the ones that are really honest with the world economy are saying we are headed for a world depression like we've never seen before. You know, the world leaders don't want to tell you that because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But some of the best economists in the world, nothing to do with Pharaoh's dream or anything else, just by the signs there are saying that we are headed for this. So it's a dual prophecy. It's all going in cycles of seven. If you go now to verse 46. Verse 46. It says, and Joseph was a son of 30 years as he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the face of Pharaoh and passed over in all the land of Egypt. And the land produced by handfuls in the 7 years of plenty. And he gathered all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt. And he put food in the cities, the food of the field which is around each city, he put in among it. And Joseph heaped up grain like the sand of the sea exceedingly much until he ceased to count it because it was without number. So here it is, Yahweh blesses the fruit of our hand. Our congregation in the Philippines, they got a new property just a few years ago. And it was a commercial rice field. And in all the time of that commercial rice field, the most rice it ever produced, you know, each harvest, was 30 to 35 bags. The bags are about, I think, 50 or 100 kilos, I don't remember, but it's about that. In their first harvest after taking over, they had more than double that. They had like 80 bags, and they never produced that in all the years it did it. So Yahweh will intervene, and He will give us overabundance, but we also have to do our part. We have to do our part, you know, because if not, we're going to see what happens. Verse 53, and the 7 years of plenty which were in the land of Egypt were ended. And the 7 years of famine began to come, according to Joseph had said. And the famine was in all the lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread, right? Remember, when the plagues were coming, there was darkness in the land of Egypt, but the land of Goshen where the Israelites were, there was no darkness. Yahweh can bless His people, but Yahweh wants to see what we're going to do too. And all the land of Egypt hungered, and the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to Egypt, go to Joseph, what he says to you do. And the famine was on the face of all the land, and Joseph opened all which was in them, and sold to the Egyptians. And the famine was strong in the land of Egypt, and all the earth came to Egypt to buy to Joseph, for the famine was strong in all the earth. So wow, he was so faithful and prepared so much, he was able to feed everybody, not just Egypt, but he was able to feed everybody by it. Then if we go to Genesis 47, Genesis 47 in verse 13. It says, and no bread was in the land because the famine was exceedingly severe. And the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan were completely burned up from the famine. And Joseph gathered all the silver found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan in return for the grain they were buying. And Joseph brought in the silver to the house of Pharaoh. And the silver failed from the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan. And all Egypt came into Joseph, saying, give us bread. Why should we die before you? For the silver has failed. And Joseph said, give your livestock, and I will give to you for your livestock if silver has failed. And they brought in their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave bread to them for the horses, and for the livestock of the flocks, for the livestock of the herds, and for the donkeys. And he satisfied them with bread in that year for all their livestock. And that year ended, and they came into him in the second year and said to him, we cannot hide from my master that the silver and the livestock and the animals have failed. Going to my master, nothing is left before my master except our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land become slaves to Pharaoh, and give seed so that we may live and not die, and the land not be desolate. Then it talks about Joseph buying the land from them. And verse 25, and they said, you have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the eyes of my master, and we will become slaves to Pharaoh. So this is very interesting, because it's a lot like we just read about the mark of the beast. Right? These people wanted the mark. And what happens? The mark of the beast is 42 months. Right? It's right in the middle of the 7 year period. What happens here? The first year of this 7 year period, people have to spend all their money, right? So you're going to see a financial crisis, and then food is going to shorten up. If you have money, you can buy it. Then when the money's gone, the second year, your houses, your livestock, all your possessions, you're going to have to sell to get food. But by the third year, you're becoming a slave. By the third year, you're getting the mark of the beast. Isn't that really interesting? How it fits just like Revelation. Within halfway through that 7 year cycle, you see the same thing happening. So the people who aren't preparing, that's what you risk. You risk, you know, some people may say, no, I don't care, I'll starve to death, I won't take the mark of the beast. And I say, well, if you won't do simple preparation, when you know that a famine is coming, do you really think you're going to starve to death instead of taking the mark of the beast? Of course not. Of course not. So in Genesis 45, verse 4, we see, who was behind all this? Was it Joseph? No. Genesis 45 and verse 4. When Joseph tells his brothers who he is, and he says, I'm your brother Joseph. And then in verse 5 he says, and now do not be greedy, and let no anger be in your eyes because you sold me here. For Elohim sent me before you to save life. For the famine has been in the midst of the land for 2 years, and there still are 5 years in which no plowing and harvest will be done. It's almost like a 7-year Shemitah. No food will be in that time. And Elohim sent me before you to put a remnant in the land for you, and to keep alive for you a great deliverance. And now you not send me here. You did not send me here, but Elohim. And he has placed me for a father to Pharaoh, and for a master in his house, and to be a ruler in all the land of Egypt. So, you know something? Our life is a trail. You know, your life is a trail. And when we don't walk by faith, we lose our direction. And then you don't know which way to go on that trail. But when you're living by faith, you see those markers. You don't lose your spot on where you're coming. Every step our trail is connected to where we came from and where we're going. So that's the point we are now. And this is what I believe that Yahweh is sharing with me, to come and share with the people that Yahweh is, the same way that Satan is planning his one world government, Yahweh is planning to save his people. And this is real. It's life and it's death. But Yahweh wants to test each person. And the Laodicean is the one who's rich and increased with goods and need of nothing. He's the one that's not going to prepare because he doesn't see any reason to it. But the Philadelphian is the one who realizes he has little strength. He's got to trust in Yahweh. He's got to prepare for that. Proverbs 24 and 25 and 6 says, "Let your eyes look straight ahead, and let your eyelids look straight before you. Ponder the tracks of your feet, then all your ways will be established," right? Your feet bring you wherever you go. Let your eyes look straight ahead, let your eyelids look straight before you. Ponder the track of your feet, then all your ways will be established. And the scripture I started with, Proverbs 22 and verse 3, "A prudent one sees the evil coming and hides himself, but the foolish go on and are punished." So Yahweh is giving us the wisdom. It's Him that's preparing us for this. "Man shall not live by bread alone, but every word out of the mouth of Yahweh." Almost a third of the Bible is prophecy, and 90% is for a time. Yahweh put these things there not to scare us, but to give us vision for the end time, and to test us to see if we truly have faith in His word, and will prepare in faith for what is coming, or if we will live in fear and hide under a rock and act as everything will continue this way forever. There are a few people in the world today who actually understand prophecy, and we should be thankful that the Holy Spirit is opening up our minds and warning us of what is ahead and preparing us for the kingdom of Yahweh. Time is moving. We must get ready now. And like I told the brethren at the feast, you know, I planned on being in Jerusalem like we've been for the last 19 years. Another interesting thing, it's one time cycle, 19 years, but Yahweh said it's time to go to the wilderness. He showed it in no uncertain terms. And I told the people there, I don't know if we'll be there next year. We might be there next year, we might be there 5 years, we might be there 1 year. I have no idea now. I'm taking life a day at a time and a year at a time because I know we're in a new time frame now. And really all my focus that I want to do, what Yahweh has shown me, is to help the brethren prepare for the Shemitah. Help them prepare. And I know that each year, if we are in the wilderness, is gold. It's gold. It's, you know, because that's the lesson. That's what we're told. We have to overcome the lessons that the Israelites didn't. And you can learn the lessons like we're sharing, you know, like I share the messages online. But the one thing I'm realizing is when it comes to the wilderness, there's nothing that you can exchange for it. One way or the other, you're going to have to be there. Not everybody will be in the literal wilderness in Jordan, but if you could be, it's amazing. But if not, you're going to be in the wilderness somewhere else. You know, there's only one road to the promised land, and that's through the wilderness. So one way or another. But the training was just unbelievable that Yahweh started to show us there. So I pray that the message, you know, will be taken to heart, and really to pray and meditate on it as time is moving on. And I don't also think it's a coincidence of Elder Wilco starting the property out there in Escol, right? In both places, next to Salem, you know, all these little things that come up, you know, that Yahweh is really moving. And it's amazing. This year, I think we've had around 10 new communities starting. Next year, we probably have about the same. And I'm not even doing anything. The people are coming to me. I'm just trying to help them to coordinate with it. But all over the world, Yahweh is moving his people in the same way. You know, that it's the time to be coming out of the world. It's a mindset first, and everybody preparing for the kingdom of Yahweh. So I pray that Yahweh will bless you. Shabbat Shalom. I'm really, really thrilled to be here.